Graham for Senate Revenue. Today we have the beginning of a very interesting issue, Senate Bill 260. We have a number of folks who have signed up to testify. We'll begin with a little bit of housekeeping. We're going to talk about our schedule for the rest of the week here today. Well, actually, we just have today, and then our next week's schedule tomorrow to let everybody know what their opportunities are to connect with this issue and the fact that our organization, the committee, will be doing what I consider a fairly careful deliberation on Senate Bill 260. We're not in a big rush to get somewhere with this thing. We want to do the right thing for all concerned. So I'll just ask Paul to orient the committee and those here present to what our schedule is for next week in this bill.
Mr. Chair, a couple of things. One, unrelated to the education issues, is tomorrow is the House Revenue Committee will be a report from the contractors on the highway cost allocation study, which will be in here in Hearing Room A at 1:30, and Chair Shetterly invites all of you to attend. And they'll go through the latest finding, and of course, that's particularly important because of Measure 76, which is now part of the Constitution, that requires revenues to match cost responsibilities between heavy and light vehicles. Next week's schedule for related bills to Senate Bill 260, on Tuesday, schedule Senate Bill 61, which looks at how extended ADMW is treated, and you've had a public hearing on that before. And SJR 2, which is from the Superintendent of Public Instruction on a school a stabilization fund. And then on Wednesday, Senate Bill 519, which is a deal for the transportation grant, and then back with Senate Bill 260 on Wednesday, and then 260 again on Thursday. Actually, all three of those bills, 260, Senate Bill 61, and Senate Bill 519, will all be on the schedule for Thursday. So Senate Bill 260 is back on Wednesday and Thursday, so you'll have that will be laid out in the schedule for your deliberations.
The point here, colleagues and folks here present, is that the issues are complicated. People have a lot of very deep feelings about these issues. The chair's intention is to give everyone as much notice as possible and as much opportunity as possible to come and testify on this issue. It's very important. In our order of business, we have a public hearing on Senate Bill 260. We will open that. And I would like to call forth Representative Elaine Hobson because she has some testimony she'd like to offer, and also it's the chair's intention that the people's business be conducted in a timely manner. And Representative Hobson has her own very important committee work to do, so we're appreciative of her time and thank her for coming before the committee. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Chair Ferrioli, and committee members for this opportunity to talk to you about educational service districts. I think, as many of you know, I'm a longtime professional educator, and I'm coming from several points of view on this issue. I actually first became acquainted with ESDs, and this will date me just a tad bit, when it was the Marion County Intermediate Education District, IEDs. So I've lived through the process of having them change and merge and reconfigure themselves in a number of ways. And I want to hit it from four short points of view. One is the history that I've had, the process used by the task force of which I was a member, the recommendations, and the reasons for implementation of these recommendations. I first used the Marion County ESD, IED, whatever you want to call it, when I was a superintendent up in Detroit, Oregon, as a small rural district. Actually, that doesn't exist anymore. It's part of the Mill City area. So I've been through that process also. We used the ESD for a number of things that was invaluable in special education, media services, those kinds of things. 30 years later, I became superintendent of Tillamook School District. And when I first moved there, we had the Tillamook ESD, and it served three school districts, Neocony, Nestuck, and Tillamook, for a total of about 3,500 kids. Soon after I got there, the legislation was implemented to where we merged with what later became the Northwest Regional Education Service District. In that district, there are about 100,000 students served. We are in the same ESD with Beaverton, with over 30,000 students, and Jewell, with less than 200 students. It has 20 districts altogether. So you can see that there really is a difference, a community of interest. One of the things that happened during that merger, and I will speak just from Tillamook School District, so that's what I was familiar with at that time, we lost $500,000 a year due to that merger. Prior to the merger, the ESD, Tillamook ESD, paid for our special education services in total. The merger occurred. We lost $500,000, not just the first year. That would be an ongoing cost, which, of course, we assumed and worked into our budget. I didn't fight that merger, even though my district was losing $500,000, because it was the right thing to do. It wasn't fair that we were having all of our special ed paid for from an outside source and other districts weren't. And if you remember, this has all been within the last 10 years when every district has faced some real serious budget concerns with Measure 5 and those kinds of things. The issue became very important last year because of the lawsuit that was filed by Crooks to Shoots. Actually, it was filed a couple of years ago. And the issue there, and I think you're aware of this from some of the information you've received, we have had a situation prior to last year where some ESDs were receiving less than $100 per student, and some ESDs were receiving almost $2,000 per student. Now, we worked on that last time, and I have mixed emotions on reporting to you that we fixed it somewhat. Now we have all of our districts receiving at least $150 per student, and we still have districts receiving $2,000 per student. I think it's real hard, and as I'll mention later, to justify that in any way. And again, coming from rural areas, I've heard all the arguments. I know about small school corrections. I know about travel. I know about distance, all those kinds of things. And they are all important. I'm not denying that. 150 per head opposed to 2,000 per head. I have a hard time bringing that all together. But because of this problem, which I see as a basic inequity, and also because of the lawsuit, that always kind of gets our attention, as we all know, a task force was established. And this task force had a number of representatives. I believe there were 17 members, but I also think you probably have the report, so if I'm off one or two on those, forgive me. But it had six ESD members on it, representatives of ESDs. It had someone from Jackson County, Cove School District. It was a wide variety, and the purpose had been to bring the different points of view to the table. That task force worked many hours. We processed tons of paper, more than I even like to think about. We listened to hours of testimony. The committee, members of the committee, even went out to areas far away from Salem, far away from I-5, to try and hear from the people who were, in fact, being negatively impacted by this. And not for a minute do I deny that there are people and agencies and ESDs that are being negatively impacted. We discussed every aspect of both the mergers, the recommended mergers, and the funding equalization parts or potential parts. The recommendations, even though there are a number of them there, I think that your concerns and everyone's interests focus primarily on two issues, and as usual, one of those is money. We can always focus on that. And the other is the reduction in the numbers of the ESDs. Currently, we have 21. The recommendation is that that be decreased to 15. I happen to support that reduction, and as I mentioned initially, I was involved in that, and none of these, let me tell you, are as complicated as the one that happened in Northwest Regional ESD with its 20 districts varying, as I mentioned, from Jewell to Beaverton. But my main point here, and I think my real passion on this, is in regard to the funding. A again, how can we justify to all of our children why a child in one district, ESD area is, I don't mean to use the word worth, because that's not what you're saying or what any of us are saying, but they receive $125 for being in this ESD and another one receives $2,000. Another example of the problem is in the Northwest Regional ESD and Multnomah ESD. And I think you have some materials on that that you can look at your leisure. I know how much leisure you have. We have Multnomah ESD with about 104,000 kids, and we have Northwest Regional with about 101,000. And really, when you look at that, that's the same for all practical purposes. And in fact, Northwest Regional will probably exceed Multnomah, because there's not a lot of room to grow in Multnomah, and there's a teeny bit left in the other areas. Nevertheless, to cut to the bottom line on that, if you look at the numbers, Multnomah County ESD, or Multnomah ESD receives $41 million. Northwest Regional ESD, remember, about the same size, receives $15 million. I don't know what to say to illustrate that any more dramatically in my mind than that. And I don't pick that because that's an ESD that's totally representative of my district. I pick it because it's such an extreme example. Another point that I think is very important here, Multnomah ESD supports this equalization. Even though it is going to cut their budget dramatically over the long run in the years till 2005, if this is accepted and moves on, they still support this, as do most of the ESDs. And I guess lastly, and hopefully this encompasses everything else that I've mentioned here, this really is good for kids. It's good for all the kids. And unlike everyone else, I hate to take away from one group to give to another. That doesn't feel good. It didn't feel good to the committee when we discussed it. Nobody likes to do that. We've agonized through that after Measure 5, taking from one group of kids and giving to another group of kids. And would that we had enough money to fund everything that we wanted to, that would be great too. But we all know that we don't. In fact, the more I hear, we're lucky to fund the few things we do want to fund before we get out of here. But I would ask you to consider what we've gone through in the last 10 years, going back to Measure 5, the equalization that we've had to do for that. This is the last leg of that. This is an area that, first of all, it's the right thing to do. Secondly, we'll probably, in fact, I would say no doubt, end up in litigation if we don't do this. And lastly, it really is good for kids. Maybe not some numbers who will have decreased funding, but overall, and I think that's one of the things we do try to do, is look at the big picture. Not that I always do that, but I'm trying to in this one at least. So I encourage you to support this bill and move it forward, and I would be happy to pass any hard questions on to anybody else.
Representative Hossam, I really appreciate your testimony today. The chair and I think the members appreciate the fact that you bring a professional perspective of your experience to the issue. I do have some questions, and I'm sure other committee members do have some questions. The committee's looked at a lot of different ways to compare ESDs. And the recommendation from the report really focuses on dollar per student on an ADMW basis, or an average daily membership weighted. but it's also clear that no ESDs perform the same services. You don't compare these two or three or 17 or 21 ESDs directly. And clearly, the statistics that you gave us in your own experience with a $150 per student allocation versus a $2,000 per student allocation simply can't be understandable in terms of the amount of dollars per student, because the ESDs are constituted differently, they're configured differently, and they provide different services. Are you suggesting that we just go to the dollars for equity and just flatline everybody, regardless of the services that they provide?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is such a good question, and it kind of goes to the heart of this. I think the differences of the ESD present both a blessing and a curse. I would never want to see very finite ways for ESDs to operate, because that also is their blessing, and I think it's even more so in the last 3, 4, 5 years, educational service district. And I know in a number of the ESDs, they're working diligently to identify and determine exactly what services the individual districts want. And in some cases, that's relatively easy. There are a finite number of school districts, 3, 4, 5, and that's pretty, you can sit around a table. In some of the other districts, it's far more complicated and far more difficult, but I still think it's being done. And I'm fine with that. I don't think that it should be limited to where ESDs will be 1, 2, 3, 4. I have some changes I'd like to see in them, and I've never been hesitant about expressing those. But I think it needs to rest with the component districts to make that decision as to what they want them to do. Now, moving more on point to your question in regard to the funding, no, I don't. I do believe there are differences among the ESDs that may cause a need for more revenue. I believe that that would be addressed in a small school correction, fast growing, you know, all the other characteristics that come into it. I think on its base that it should be equal ADMW allocation. And then if there's something really abhorrent about the way that comes out, then maybe we do need to tweak it. And again, I'm one of these, I'm always willing to look at things and tweak them. I don't think anything is carved in stone anymore. I used to when I was young.
If I can recapitulate and restate or just echo back, your recommendation is that we flatline the ESDs, but that we make the adjustments in the funding formulas to compensate for differences in service.
I say that's a possibility. And again, as we all know, tweaking with the funding formula for K-12 is, you know, I always feel like it's like a house of cards, and heaven forbid we move one little card, the whole thing's going to collapse. But the nice thing I believe about the recommendations on the, it really isn't going to take any additional money. I do agree with the flatlining, the gradual reduction. We have 4 years, 2005, then there would be an equal amount on ADMW.
We have a whole bunch of ESDs. Do they all use the same accounting systems?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can't answer that specifically right now. I would say they will very soon, because they're all on the Database Initiative Project. And thank goodness that's going to bring some conformity to all the educational agencies, so ultimately they will be. And that is a critical point.
When we received the task force recommendation, there wasn't a gap analysis included anywhere in it. So how will we understand, or what should we do to understand an equity question if we don't know what services are being provided by which districts and which are not being provided by either the school district or the ESD?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That information is available. There was quite an extensive survey done of all the districts, and it was absolutely amazing, even to an old-timer like me, the services that are provided. But that is available, and we can get that information, a real extensive it was on the internet for a while, so people could access it. But you're right, there are myriad of services offered, and I can't argue with that.
And I guess the last thing is that in the last legislative session, we gave people in communities the right to vote their own new tax bases for education, essentially authorizing special levies outside the formula. ESDs, in the most cases, not all, but most of them are separate taxing districts, and they are, in fact, created by their local communities. If we flatline these things, haven't we just essentially taken the authority of the local community to support its own education systems and programs and turned it on its ear?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would go back to one of the initial statements. I'm not sure that they're that local. They may be in some areas where there's 2, 3, 4 districts. I know, speaking for Tillamook School District, I don't ever feel that the ESD is local in that way. We're part of a consortium, if you will. As far as the passing of the local option, in some communities, and some that I represent, it doesn't even come up. It's one of those issues that it's not going to happen. It'd be nice to have it, and if I were the sole vote that could do it, I would vote for it, for education. But it's not going to pass in a number of areas, so I just don't think it's a viable option. And I think we saw with the K-12 districts who did pursue that, most of us would have known those would pass. For our own districts, a lot of us didn't even try because we knew it wasn't going to happen, and it could be very divisive in the community.
I think anyone who doesn't appreciate the trauma that Tillamook County's gone through in that forced ESD, or the forced consolidations, should talk to you about that and some of the other folks that I've talked to about what that felt like in the community. I guess in the final analysis, do you think this sets a precedent for the legislature looking at all special districts? You've got hospital districts, police districts, fire districts. It's probably 800 or more special service districts. Should these be looked at for consolidation as well?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That isn't, of course, my area of expertise. My initial answer would be no. Number one, the state is so heavily involved in education, both financially as well as providing the framework from which we educate our children. I don't see that kind of money, first of all, and control, second of all, in the other special districts. I'd want to spend more time really thinking about that, but with hospitals and water and those kinds of things, I don't think that we need to look that carefully at those.
Well, I guess the question for me is, we've been through one of these, or several sets of trauma with consolidation, school district and now ESD recommendations, and they are very disruptive. And the issue, as you pointed out, there looks to be some great disparities, even on orders of magnitudes of 20 times, $150 to $2,000. We've got 50 in my district, $52 to at a low end to a high of many times that, three or four times that, five times that amount. And so there, on the face, there looks like an extreme disparity. You mentioned the lawsuit. And I believe that's the one brought by the Cook County School District. They've made recent communication to me and the committee about the relative importance of the ESD equity, and it seems that they are perhaps not as aggressive about pursuing the equity issues. There are some other issues in public school financing. And I'm not sure whether the courts would order us to do anything except use the information on the gap analysis and a comparison on service basis as two elements of indicator in addition to ADMW. But I see a lot of emphasis on just looking at the dollars and flatlining people. I'm going to open it up for questions to the committee. Senator Barr has some questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to make sure I understand what you're saying, Representative, first, because one of the discussions that we had a lot the first day we had testimony on this issue was around that idea of supporting a minimum level of services. I was trying to do that. It seems like what you're saying is it would be hard to do that because the services vary so greatly, and secondly, that you believe that you wouldn't want to see the state get into mandating that services. Did I understand you correctly on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Beyer. Yes and no. I do believe there is definitely a core group of services that are provided by the ESDs. Mm-hmm. The most notable, of course, is in special education. And it's probably, and again I say this as a generalization, the most difficult, and as it is in funding. We all know what we're dealing with in funding. You have a child, the services to that child can cost upward to $40,000 on the extreme end, and other students are in regular classrooms and actually probably doesn't cost any more to implement the individual education program. So I think there, I didn't mean to imply there isn't a core basis for ESDs. I think it then gets to the other areas where ESDs work. That gives a lot of flexibility. I think there's far more commonality of services provided than there are differences. I think some of the differences, again, relate to urban, rural, those kinds of things much more than the baseline of what ESDs were originally set out to do. And I'm always amazed at the fact, and I don't know who all is sitting behind me here, that we don't have Portland and Beaverton and, say, Eugene in here, they don't need the ESDs.
Portland is here.
Oh, great. Hey, right, what I just said.
Actually, if I look at the witness list, ma'am, Lane County.
Oh, that would be big trouble, yeah.
Well, let's just suggest I don't smell boiling tar yet. Representative, you're okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could finish that thought after I had already opened my mouth. I think in all honesty, and we deal with Beaverton in my local area on this, they probably don't need us as an ESD, if you get right down to it. They probably pay the most money, and Portland is probably a good example in Multnomah County. There's no doubt in my mind that Portland gives the most money to the Multnomah ESD. On the other hand, I think what's developed is a real fine working relationship amongst the schools that is very, very beneficial. I know that's true here with the Willamette ESD, and I think it's a good example because it has Salem as the elephant, if you will, and the other rural districts, quite a number of them around, and they do work together. They share. It provides a forum for them to share resources. So I think even though some of those larger ones don't need an ESD as such, particularly in special education, it's still beneficial to everyone.
Representative, but I guess where I was going with that is, and it was interesting to say, there is a core level of services. I think the argument that goes with that is there's a minimum amount of money that's necessary to provide that core level of services, whether you're out in the south, you know, eastern corner of Oregon or in downtown Portland. And sort of defining that. And one of the issues that we've sort of talked about a little bit, although I wouldn't suggest we're moving in any direction, was can you define what those core services are and say, okay, here's a base. It strikes me that one way would be to try to do that. The other way would be to say, we recognize it's there, let's not get into details, and let's set a minimum funding level for all ESDs and then with some weighted formula above the minimum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Beyer, I would suggest that that's more or less where we are on this. We could quibble about where that minimum amount might be, whether we equalize those numbers or whether we leave them like they are. Most of the ESDs then do, in fact, solicit, find, raise, grant write, beg, borrow, steal from local businesses to increase the money from that basic minimum, if I'm understanding what you think, right?
I guess it would be, well, let me just be blunt about it. Hearing it before, we were looking at the Eastern Oregon ones, which were, if you looked at a straight ADMW, were over $2,000 per ADMW. And if you look in the area of the Northwest that you cover, I think it was like 160 or something like that, versus right next door in Portland, it was over 400, or right about 400, equivalent, a few bucks either way. And that was sort of the argument, how do you deal with that? You could, I suspect, I haven't done this, but I suspect you could look at the Eastern Oregon ones and say they are probably operating at a minimum threshold. It takes $1.5 million, $2 million just to get in the game. Or if you look in the urbanized areas that are in the Willamette Valley, and I suspect this is true up and down the Willamette Valley, you're dealing above that. You're above the minimum, and then you're talking about how much per ADMW. Headcount where their variation, it's probably harder to justify that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Beyer, I would agree with you. There are, but I would also hope that we wouldn't look at it as an east-west. There are some economies of scale, urban-rural, because I look at
the county.
That's
where I was going with that. Not an east-west, it's just rural versus an urbanized area.
There certainly are some differences in the economy of scale, and I think that that's something that if we approached equalization and could see some real rationale for some differences there, that would be worthy of discussion. But I don't see it at this point, particularly to the extremes with which we're dealing. And the other confounding issue is within ESDs, most of them, there is such a mix-mash. Lane ESD, for instance, has Marcola, or some of those small ones. There's all kinds of contributing factors, and I don't know this for a fact, but I would probably stake my life that Eugene's salary schedule is considerably higher than Mohawk's or Springfield's or somebody. You have all those factors that enter into it, too. And as you know, it's such a complicated issue. But I would like to see us get to someplace level so we could at least identify the confounding characteristics and maybe make some adjustments in 2006 when nobody's here.
We have questions from Senator Castillo, but the chair's going to exercise a prerogative.
That's the only exercise.
Exactly. I can list this. The issue seems to be let's flatline or perhaps do an equalization formula based on ADMW and ESDs and then solve the disequities inside the funding formula. But doesn't that just push it in here and pull it out over there? And aren't we essentially going to, if we do look at the ESD disparities on an ADMW basis, just on pure dollars, and just, you know, with a wave of the legislative pen, make all of those things equal, don't we create huge dislocations and disparities that we'll have to write all sorts of special equations into the funding formula to solve?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The answer could be a quick yes, but you know I wouldn't do that. I think that it will be done in a reasoned, thoughtful process if we do make other adjustments in there. And there are already things floating through the building, again, on small school, fast-growing, declining enrollment.
Are you referring to the reasoned, thoughtful process that we have going on in this building?
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the public, yes, of course I know.
I had to do a reality check for a second. All right. Well, I do really appreciate that. I interrupted Senator Castillo on the point of her question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Eliana, I was wondering, since we have you before us, if you could speak to the issue that some people have raised about us rather that we should maybe perhaps refocus on not so much equity in funding as equity in services and making sure that we have equity of services around the state and the ESDs and then figure out the funding to provide that. Could you speak to that issue?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Castillo. In a perfect world, I probably would go for that, but I think if you're looking at equity of services, that's where we get into this problem of the services being so different. Because, again, I think there is a core set of services, but after that, it's over the plate. And I think the ideal part of that is that is determined by the component districts in the ESDs. So I don't think that you can ever get to where you have X number of services. And I'll say something else that will annoy most of my friends in the education in the ESD world. I happen to think that when you're dealing with the Department of Education, the ESDs are the natural way for that to be handled. In other words, they could monitor us. All my ESD friends just get up in arms about that and say, we're not going to be the arm for the Department of Education. Well, fine. But I think that would be, and that would be an equity of services there. I'm not proposing that or anything. So I understand your point, but I don't think it's really valid or applicable at this point in time. Would that it were.
Yeah, well, I just know that some people, as people are talking to us as members of the Revenue Committee, that this is an issue that's been brought up, and I just wanted to get your reaction to it. So, thanks.
Further questions for Kirsten Hobson? Senator Minnis.
Well, you know, the benefit of being term limited allows me, I guess, to try to think outside of the box, and I guess the first question I have is why do ESDs exist in the first place? What is the purpose, knowing that they're not constitutionally mandated? Because in one sense, we have this as legislators, this potential threat that if we don't do the following, we don't equalize ESDs, then we're going to be sued and we're going to have to, you know, kind of continue down that path. So I would guess go back to square one and ask the question, what is the very purpose of ESDs? And if we can define the very purpose of ESDs, we get to the question of what is the core function. Because I'm sitting here in my feeble mind thinking, why would we give any money to ESDs? Why not just give it to the districts? And let the districts purchase the services from whomever they choose, whether it's the ESDs or someone else. And rather than getting into this discussion about trying to define what services the districts think they need for their student populations. And I say that understanding that, you know, kind of blowing up the world here, but I think it's a relevant question because I don't see us being very productive when we're looking at who's going to sue who next kind of thing over equity, because I think services do matter. I think there are some differences. And there was another question that was raised here about salaries. I mean, clearly salaries are different in various regions around the state. But when we look at the appropriation on a per-student basis, We don't look at salaries. We ignore it. We pretend it doesn't exist. So I guess I'm asking the question, you know, what's our rational process by which we come to these conclusions that, you know, that the distribution formula makes sense?
Mr. Chair, it's being noted for the record that he asked this question of a Democrat. Thank you very much.
Is she really a donut? She's a Democrat? A little sugar high here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis. I hear this all the time. I'm so glad you asked that question. This one I said, yeah. That is the exact question that the members of the task force and the ESD folks were asked. If there were no ESDs, what would it look like? What do you want? What do they do? That was the initial question. What services are provided? And let's say that there weren't any ESDs, what would you want them to do? And that information, again, it's so voluminous, and some of it's not even real interesting. But I would encourage you to read that because it's critical. And take a small district, Marcola, I did mention it. They can't afford to hire a full-time physical therapist, those kinds of things. That is so important. Over in Eastern Oregon, most of the small schools over there couldn't afford to even have a speech therapist that some of the 2,000 to 3,000 ones can find the need for. So you have to have a central location from which those people can be sent out to provide those services. And I'm like you, I'm apologetic for bringing up the litigation piece. What a cheap, almost should be irrelevant reason for doing some of these things. But as we all know, that is a fact of life. That is a reality, and it's one of the things. And I think the small school districts shudder and shy away from the potential of litigation, and we kind of stand behind the ones that take up the cause and run with it, like Crook Deschutes, or I guess it was Bend School District, whichever one. So that is, it's a good question. There's a lot of information. What good do they do out there? And again, the audiovisual, they provide forum for interaction. I wish they did more in regard to curriculum. But even there, a lot of the smaller districts, I'd say most of them 2,000 and under, and that's the majority of our districts, you know, the majority of our districts are less than 2,000. They don't have curriculum directors. You can't afford to hire a curriculum director. And if you could, somebody that pays a bunch like Beaverton would steal them away from you if they were good. They provide all those kind of staff development, all the things that you don't have an opportunity to do in a small district. And again, I can't remember what the percentages are, but it's 50, 60, 70% are less than 2,000 kids in our state. So we're talking a whole bunch of small districts.
Other questions?
No.
Yeah. Further questions for Representative Hopson? Representative Hopson, you've given us another perspective. I appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Thank you
for the time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Could we bring forth, there's some folks that have traveled relatively long distances to be here. The folks from Lake County ESD have traveled a long way, so have the folks from Gillum County. I'd like to bring Judge Laura Pryor and the group that she has brought forward, and then on deck would be John Widnoa, I probably butchered the pronunciation, but he's the Lake County ESD Board Chairman. We could begin with Ms. Pryor and whoever else she wishes to bring forward. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Laura Pryor, and I'm the county judge from Gillum County, and I am not an educator. And I am here representing the five rural frontier ESDs that are in question in the task force report and who Senate Bill 260 would have a great impact on. I'm not representing Jefferson or Yamhill County ESDs. The federal government, in its wisdom, has decided to break rural into separate categories. We now have, under the federal designation, we have rural, it starts with urban-rural. We have urban-rural, rural, frontier rural, and uninhabited rural. And we haven't made that one yet, but we are in frontier rural Oregon.
Senator?
And it should be noted for the record that rural is one syllable. Right, Judge.
It is, sir. Thank you. Unless you're from the South.
Judge Pryor, we have urban, rural.
And rural.
And rural.
Frontier rural.
Frontier rural.
And uninhabited rural.
And these are population-based?
Yes.
Uninhabited rural would be, that would be zero.
That would be the school district way out there.
Okay, got it. Thank you, ma'am.
The reason that I'm making that comment is because
we don't have a designation for Irish rural, do we?
Nor Italian rural, sir.
Oh, rural.
Thank you.
I'll help you out with that anytime you need, Mr. Ferrioli, chairs.
Oh, rural.
People Ferrioli.
Senator Kirk, I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you. So are my, you wouldn't believe it, but so are my committee members. They're really happy to have me here.
I really feel inadequate to try to attack this problem. I've been working on transportation for so long, and I find myself, and trying to protect school bus roads, I find myself now trying to protect the buses that run on those roads in a way. I've been trying since the last time I had the privilege of being here before you and thinking about this issue. How can I capture the essence of these five frontier rural ESDs and what they do in a way that will convey to you why we feel this is incredibly important? And I'm going to try to do that in a very simple way. We believe that they provide a structure that accomplishes two critical objectives. And the first one is that they collectively, in their collective structure, provide a minimum level of education that any child in Oregon has a right to. And the second piece is that they allow schools within their districts to aspire to meet the state education requirements in several categories: curriculum development, shared resources, teacher training, counseling, and special education. Now, those are broad categories, and as Representative Hobson said, there's a lot of services within all of those categories. But if I were to try to convey to you what I think is important about these five real rural ESDs, that's where I would put the emphasis. They provide a minimum level of education to any child that any child in Oregon has a right to have, and that they allow the schools within the ESD district to aspire to meet the state education requirements in curriculum development, shared resources, teacher training, counseling, and special education. Now, having said that, the important word in that whole thing is aspire. I'm not saying we meet them, but we can at least aspire to meet them with this ESD structure. The region that these frontier rural ESDs serve have some commonality. They have a student population of no more than 1,500 ADM. There's about 40 miles between each school, at least 40 miles, with just a couple of exceptions. And the population of the region is 1.5 persons per square mile. Total population, 35,000 people over a square mile, 27,000 square miles. That's seven counties in the state of Oregon. Five of those have the lowest per capita income in the state. And then you've got a whole bunch of geographic stuff, 400 feet to 4,000 feet, across this entire region that you're talking about, sparsely populated. There's a couple of things that were commented on here earlier that I would just like to take a minute to address. One is this ESD that's got 2,000 kids, I mean, $2,000 per kid. That's right. That's my ESD in the North Central region that serves the three counties that have the least population in the state. Together, we're about 5,000 people. And we also have the lowest per capita income. It equals Appalachia. I'm not proud of that, and we've worked hard on it. And even with sending us all of Portland's trash, we still can't get above those numbers, which is a crime, but that's the way it is. Now, if we had $200 per student, not 2,000, what if we had 200 for 1,050 kids that we serve across this region in our own ESD, we'd have $210,000. Now, I'm going to ask you to think about, what would it cost us to hire a couple of special education folks and even have a desk for them to work at? So I know that number leaps off the page at people, and they say, oh, my God, how can this be fair? I understand that issue. Our folks voted that in when our tax base was $46 a thousand. Nobody looked at the per thousand taxes in the state of Oregon at that time and said, oh, my God. There's somebody out there paying $46 a thousand, and that's not fair. But that's how that happened. I think the discussion around why ESDs exist, if you were to take the funds, whatever you arrive at, if you were to take those funds and give them directly to the schools, the schools in Frontier, rural Oregon would have to recreate something like the ESDs, or they could not meet in any way, shape, or form even the special education component of what they do now. They couldn't do it. It would be impossible. Many of our school districts are 80 kids. Now, it seems reasonable to think, oh, you should consolidate them. You should aggregate them. I would agree with that if you didn't have 200 miles in between. That basically is our dilemma and yours. If you look at a list of the counties in the state of Oregon by population, we're talking about the bottom six counties. And that land, there's nothing we can do about it. I mean, unless we're going to mandate people can't live out there. We're getting close to that anyway. We'll all be in Portland and, you know, still working with congestion issues. But that basically is our problem. That's our dilemma, and it's your dilemma. And I would like to close my comments by handing out, I only have one copy of this, I'm sorry, but we went down to this ESD is in the bottom of my courthouse. And I went down and took some pictures down there because I want to show you the circumstances under which this ESD that has $2,000 per kid, how they operate, the conditions under which they operate and they serve these children. And I'm very, very proud to represent these people of this ESD. These people do a great job. They do a great job for very few kids. And most of our kids go on to college, thank God. And a lot of it has to do with the commitment of people like these. So I thank you for the opportunity to testify before. You'd be glad to answer questions. And unfortunately, you'll probably see me again.
I do have some questions, and I'm sure the committee does. Judge Pryor, most people who have testified do point out the disparity, and I really appreciate hearing the facts behind the numbers that may give people a better understanding of how we got there. We get there because these folks voted themselves a tax burden that reflected their need, and I assume that taxpayers in those five counties being the lowest per capita income counties in Oregon, voted hard, meaning they thought hard, thought long, before they decided to tax themselves at a very high rate, which is how we get to this place where we are after Measure 5 and Measure 50 with this disparity that we've got. But we've heard it justified here today and other times that we ought to flatline the ESD funding. Would your community be able to deliver services equitably and fairly and in the spirit of the law, which is for equal educational opportunity throughout the state of Oregon, if we did flatline those services? And if not, where would we try to make the adjustments to make up for the losses?
Senator Farioli, members of the committee, obviously, I think that would depend upon where you flatlined the money. We've already undergone a consolidation. We put the three smallest ESDs together. When we were considering consolidation in the first place, and we went through the heart-wrenching discussions around that, and we looked at what's it going to take for us to be able to deliver service. We consider consolidations with other counties around us. We're much larger than us. The one of the lowest population, in fact, that is contiguous with us is 9,000 people. And we looked at what it was going to cost to be able to do it. We did the analysis against what are we required to do under the law in delivering education services, and what is it important for us to give the kids. So we did all that analysis. And I tried to answer your question, I think, in a way, Senator, when I said if we were to have $200 a child and we have 1,050 kids, we will have to have some other kind of adjustment or we won't be able, those schools won't survive. The schools won't survive. I'm not talking about the ESD. Obviously, it'll be gone. The schools won't survive. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm sitting here. I think that the difficulty is going to be, if you look at Senate Bill 260, I have told the superintendents of these five ESDs, you have to deal with that muddle. Because you're either going to flatline them and do all this maneuvering over here, which is what 260 is, frankly, when I look at it. It's an attempt to get to that or something like that.
That answers my question. I guess the other thing is what is obvious to me, having traveled over some of this territory, that what doesn't show in the ADMW formulas is time and distance. 27,000 square miles, was that the...
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that I don't know how you look at statistics divided by a low population. If you have a... statistics made up of population divided by cost, and the population of this area is point, or is, what is it, 1 point?
Somewhere around 1.4, 1.5, Senator.
1.5 persons mm-hmm. per square mile, and some schools that are 80 persons. Obviously, the math is going to come up with an incredible per capita number, and that's how you get to 2,000, as opposed to dividing that same number by a population of an urban area or an urban rural area or and even a rural area. But when you get to the frontier rural area, obviously the statistics get skewed by the relative lack of population and the need for at least a base or critical mass to provide any services.
Senator, if I could make a comment. One of our greatest problems out there in all areas is we don't have services to purchase. We have to create them ourselves. You, there's no place that can provide them. You must go to a large Boise, Pendleton, or Portland, or Bend. I mean, you have to travel to get the service, or you have to try to aggregate the need somehow and create the service yourself locally. And you can't do that independently. It's impossible.
Questions for Judge Pryor? We have several others from outlying areas. Thank you, Judge Pryor.
Thank you.
Eloquent.
Very much.
We have some folks that have traveled from Lake County. Good morning.
Good morning.
Could you help me by pronouncing your name for the record, please?
I'm John Widenoya. I'm Lake County ESD Board Chair. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Widenoya. Appreciate it.
Good job on the pronunciation. I'll work really hard on rural. I guess I don't have to worry about Senator Corcoran right now. It's 350 miles from Lakeview to Salem. I just learned this fact last night.
Because you drove it.
I drove it, yeah. And our farthest remote component district, North Lake School, is 115 miles from Lakeview. So I certainly appreciate your comments on the mileage problems. And I'd like to also thank Senator Castillo for the mention of equalization of services. I think that this is where we should be going. I think that equalization of funding, flatline funding, should occur after we've gone through the steps of equalization of services, equalization of delivery of services, and equalization of opportunity for our kids in rural settings. I'm not only board chair of the Lake County ESD, I'm vice chair and treasurer of our local clinic, that's the North Lake County Health Center, Inc. And so I'm aware of some of the federal programs that are available for health care. And one of the federal programs is rural clinic certification. This program is put in place because of the recognition of a need for monetary help for clinics, medical services being provided in rural areas. I think that we need to understand that. This is a cost-based reimbursement program, and it'll work very good for the area that I'm in here. I think that we need to look at that and understand that we need the same sort of a concept when we look at funding for ESDs and school districts. The 115 miles I mentioned between our furthest component district requires 2 hours one way, 4 hours a day travel time when we send a school psychologist up to North Lake School. This is 12 hours a week. We're setting one up there 3 days a week. That's 12 hours lost a week. That's $192 at 31 cents a mile. This comes up to around $405 extra that we're paying. When you consider a base salary, a low base salary of $33,000, this, you can make the case that it's 64% more to provide that particular service to our district up there, our component district, North Lake School. Not all of our costs are that much. That's an extreme case. Overall, though, our costs are approximately 33% more than the same service being provided here in civilization. And with that, I would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Mr. Widenow, you read the recommendations by the task force. How do they treat your district?
I don't feel that they treat the Lake District ESD in a way that will allow us to continue performing the same services. I do understand the general principle that we should be giving each kid the same opportunity. And when we see the task force recommendations, that doesn't give each kid the same opportunity. And we actually need an increase, not a decrease. If we go under the task force recommendations, we will be experiencing $16,000 less each year until equalization is reached. And this is not going to be good for education in Lake County.
If the task force recommendations are implemented and the funding formulas for
for independent education programs, the safety net, Americans with Disability Act issues, small and remote schools aren't raised sufficiently to overcome that decrease. What recourse do you have?
I don't see that we have any recourse. I don't have an answer there. The outcome will be a lessening of opportunities, educational opportunities for kids in rural areas. I don't see any recourse, so can't help you there.
Questions from the committee? Mr. Widnow, I just really appreciate the fact that you've made the drive up. That's important. We are going to be handling many more days of hearings on this issue, but your testimony is excellent. Senator Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the funding level that your SDA gets right now?
We're 316 for ADMW. We have 1,468 kids with an ADMW of 1861 at the present time. Next year, we'll be dropping down to 822. This brings us to another dilemma. You know, with the ADMW formula, we keep getting fewer and fewer dollars coming in.
The total dollar amount for the ESP is how much?
$585,000.
So $500,000. And how big is staff?
How many staff? We have, and I'm not exactly sure, 10 to probably 11, 11 or 12. I'm not sure what the exact number is.
Thank you.
That's asking the clarification for myself. The task force recommendation ultimately gets every ESD at a level amount of money per student.
Over 4 years.
Over 4 years across the state. All right. And the question the committee is trying to resolve, I think, is that an appropriate analysis or assumption or whatever place to start? And I guess I would assume that it's almost idiotic to assume that that is somehow balanced, fair, or makes any kind of sense at all, because if we have a distribution formula for basic school support that is legally defensible based on certain allocations that we recognize in terms of need, then I would suggest it's probably equally defensible to have a distribution formula based on, you know, some rational analysis of component parts or ESDs. So at least in my mind, I keep hearing all of this discussion, and it's much more complex than my mind will allow me to deal with right now. But there's a lot of people out here who are a lot smarter than I am, and they know pretty much what they need. And I guess before I ultimately end up voting one way or another on this bill, I think it would be interesting to go through some analysis to say what are those component parts. If you had to choose those component parts, recognizing those differences, can that exercise be accomplished? And I think that needs to be done. I think that's the discussion we really need to have here in the committee, because I recognize that already. I don't need any more testimony from urban rural districts and so on and so forth. I think that we clearly have a legally defensible position to create a distribution formula for ESDs, or simply terminate ESDs altogether and render the entire legal argument moot. Send the money to the districts and let them purchase their services however they choose. I don't know if I'm making any sense here, but it just seems to me that we need to get
sense
to that discussion.
Senator, you are making sense, but now I do smell boiling tar. Actually, I think the thing that does make sense is that we have heard a number of offerings of testimony about the approach that was taken in the report, the questions that the legislature asked, whether you get to an equity position driven by public policy questions, or whether you go there because you think there's a threat from the litigation, or whether or not you get to equity in by only looking at dollars, or whether the issue's more complicated and you really need to be looking at services and not dollars. So I think you've just framed the issue very accurately, Senator Mears. Any other questions from the committee? Again, our appreciation for your drive. I'm glad you didn't bring the snow with you when you came. It was threatening. Have a safe drive back to the district.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
We have others who have traveled in different directions, but also long distance. So if I could call from the Astoria School District, Mr. McClacken.
And Mr. McLaughlin, if you've got folks that you brought with you from the Northwest region or any other folks you want to bring up, let's have them forward. Our committee will be breaking in about 17 minutes, so we'll try to get all of the folks that we can up to testify for the record. Thank you.
Todd, why don't you?
Chairman Ferrioli and committee, thank you for having us here today. My name is Todd Herberg, superintendent for the Northwest Regional Education Service District. With me is Earl Fisher, superintendent for the Clatskanie School District, and Larry McMackin, superintendent for the Astoria School District. And what we do, what we'd like to accomplish today is to communicate to you our absolute support for the task force recommendations regarding ESD funding equity. Our 20 component school districts, our 20 component district school boards, as well as the ESD board, have met together and forged a common legislative platform that establishes ESD funding equity as our top priority. And again, we're here today to tell you that we unanimously support the four-year plan to implement ESD equity. We have some background information for you on the formation of our regional service district. As mentioned in Representative Hobson's testimony, we were created through legislative action in 1996, a consolidation of four educational service districts representing Clatsop, Columbia, Tillamook, and Washington County. We are now the Northwest Regional Education Service District. If you'll turn to the second page of your handout, you'll see that the current financing situation for our region is compared with current financing to the Multnomah Educational Service District as a way of illustrating the current disparity of ESD funding. You can see by the chart that we currently receive approximately $15 million in state support, while the Multnomah ESD receives $41 million in state support, when the bottom chart shows that we are virtually the same size in the number of students we serve. If you'll turn to the third page of the handout, under the proposed change, under the four-year equity plan, during the 2001-2002 school year, financing up to the state school fund for Northwest Regional ESD school districts would increase to $18.6 million as compared to $37.7 million for the Multnomah School District as they gradually are reduced in funding. You'll note the bottom chart illustrates that the Department of Education estimates that next year Multnomah and Northwest will both serve 103,000 students. The next page in your handout shows the second year of the biennium. Under the proposed equalization formula, Multnomah would be reduced to $34.8 million. Northwest Regional would increase to $22.7 million. But during that year, it is estimated that we will be serving more children than the Multnomah Educational Service District. And finally, the last page illustrates again, year by year, the disparity in funding formula. But you can see that over the next 2 years, under the proposed plan, we are moving toward equalization. Something else we want to make sure we share with you today, we really appreciate and respect the professionalism that our colleagues from Multnomah ESD and other ESDs and school districts around this state have shown as we work together in forging this compromise solution. Our districts have been damaged over the past several years by the low level of funding we have received. And you need to know that our priority resolution for this would be immediate equity. But we also recognize that that's not practical, and we fully support the four-year plan as a compromise that has been worked through the Association of Oregon ESDs, as well as the funding coalition representing each school district in this state.
The characterization of the report as a compromise is interesting. I'm not sure I agree that it's a compromise. I agree that it is an equity formula that's proposed by a study group in response to the legislative question. But your disequity in funding is what I'm really interested in, and I see that on a population basis it's quite stark when it's compared to Multnomah, which I think is probably one of the highest funding levels. How did the disparity become institutionalized? How'd you get there?
It's been a combination of events that have led us to this. One of the situations that I think the committee needs to be aware of, prior to the consolidation, ESD funding in Tillamook counties and Clatsop counties were significantly higher than they were after the mandated consolidation. A new tax rate was established for the four counties, and subsequently the funding level for all four counties was established at a uniform rate.
And that was far lower than?
Far lower than the previous levels that existed in Columbia and Tillamook County.
Destroyed your tax base.
By virtue of creating a new level of funding, yes.
And the solution for that is, at least that you're proposing, is not to just bring your level up somehow to a level of equity, but it's to flatten all of them, regardless of time or distance or the other things that you've heard testimony.
The ESD task force recommendations speak very specifically to accommodating the unique needs of sparsely populated and rurally educational service districts, and we fully expect and support that that provision would be made as a part of the determination here, as well as recognizing the unique needs of those areas that are disproportionately serving high-cost children through special education services.
So what we would essentially take away with one hand, we'd have to restore elsewhere in the budget.
It would be a rebalancing based on a variety of factors, including those that address the need for some base level of support so that all ESDs can effectively deliver services.
Okay. Questions? Let's move to the other two panels.
My name's Earl Fisher. I'm the superintendent of the Clatsop County School District. My school district is perhaps unique. Some of you may not have heard of it before. Some of you may have heard it under its previous name, Columbia School District 5J, because it took special legislation to split my district apart. As a result of the funding problems that we partially, part of the funding problems that were created as a result of Measure 5 and other measures. This school district I am in, the Clatsop County School District, is a rural district. The other portion of the old Columbia School District, Napa, is also a very rural district. Napa is 75, 80 miles away from Portland. I'm 60 miles out. The Gaston School District, which is also part of the RESD, is a very small district, Army area. The areas in the Tillamook area, in the Saco Valley and so on, 100 miles away from the metropolitan area. So we understand the issues that we've heard earlier today concerning not having services in our immediate areas. We understand the desire for equity of service as well as equity of dollars. I don't know how to address that. I think that's an issue that we're going to have to leave to the folks we send to Salem, who are much brighter than those of us in the communities, to come up with some kind of research.
That's evident. No argument here.
We're going to have some ESD money for retraining.
And I mentioned that to you because our district has been just clobbered, for lack of a better word, by Measure 5. I had a district 10 years ago that was much larger than it is now, had $4 million in the bank. Today, after laying off 25% of my staff, my teaching staff, 45% of my classified staff, 42% of my administrative staff, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to survive next year. Gaston School District, trying to figure out how it's going to stay open the rest of this year because of special needs that it has happened in that small school district. Part of our needs, part of our problems relate to the fact that we are underfunded as an ESD. I have worked in Marion County in a small district. I've worked in Multnomah County. I have a difficult time explaining to my patrons that our kids receive about $150 per head at the ESD. And if they would live 60 miles farther east in this particular case, the youngster would be supported with about $350, almost $400. That kind of inequity is difficult for us to understand. We are needing many kinds of services that the ESD does provide for us. Special education is obviously one of those areas that we look to the ESD to help. We also look in areas of technology. We look in areas of curriculum development. I think, as you heard earlier today, Our district curriculum directors are a thing of the past. We cannot afford that kind of support any longer. We go to the ESD. We look to them for that kind of leadership and for that kind of help. They try to give us the information and the materials that we need so that we can move forward in our reform efforts. If we simply don't have the time or the money to do the things necessary to make those changes. And we believe our kids should experience those kinds of good things that are being suggested by the Reform Act.
Sure, I've got a question.
Sure.
It's your recommendation and your support. You eloquently described the disaster and the disequity that was created by forced consolidation in your district. But that's what you're proposing for other rural districts in America.
I'm proposing that the suffering needs to be made equitable to some extent. How we get to equity, I'm not sure if it's going to be equity of service or equity of dollars. The one thing we do know is that the continued disparity is, on its face, extremely unfair. Our services are as poorly subsidized as those in other parts of the state that you talk about in other parts of the state. We don't have those services, and we do not have the dollars behind them to get them. And so what we're asking for is that we have some kind of equity for our small districts in our areas that is at least from the standpoint of dollars could be equated in some kind of degree. We're not even asking necessarily for absolutely the same total dollars. We're not asking for it to be done today. We're asking for it to be done over time. And as we have in the small school formula inside the regular general fund, we've tried to take, the legislature's tried to take that into account. I'm assuming that at some point in time, that when you look at equity and dealing with issues of ESDs, that you're going to find some kind of factors that will take care of those special needs in those rural areas. And I think I support that because I think I will fall in that category.
Are you suggesting that then the forced consolidation piece of this report, which you supported?
We support the equity piece. The other portions, I believe, from our standpoint, is that that's an issue that we would leave to the legislature. What we believe the equity piece is something that's extremely important.
Does the ESD that serves your district provide the same services as Multnomah County ESD?
It provides some of the same services.
Okay. So really what you're here to do is tell us that you've been put in a situation of disequity, and this report, whether you support portions of it or all of it, is an attempt to get the legislature focused on solving the question of equity.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Due to the time frame, I'm going to ask that Mr. McLaughlin offer some testimony, and then we have two other witnesses at least that want to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Larry McMacken, superintendent. That's fine. Larry McMacken, superintendent of the Astoria School District. I want to bring up a couple other points because I heard several points made this morning about service. In our ESD, we have not been able to provide some areas of service such as full special ed programs or more extensive special ed programs because the dollars haven't been there. When Astoria was part of the Clatsop County ESD, we were able to have those services through our ESD. The school district absorbed $750,000 worth of costs when that ESD consolidation took place. That's significant. Now, we've tried to work through those issues, one, by having a very effective process within our ESD in setting priorities and identifying services even at the county level. And two, school districts within our county have formed consortiums to provide service programs that we just could not have provided by the ESD and could not provide individually as a school district. So those are a couple areas that I really wanted you folks to hear. We do have a lot of high-risk students in the Astoria School District, and we have to find ways to meet some of those needs. I want to share a short story from a neighboring school district where a student and family lived in a in a county that where special ed services for high risk, low cost, low incidence kids, those services were provided by the ESD. When that student was placed in a foster home in a neighboring school district, those costs had to be absorbed by the local school district. That's about, in that case, between $80,000 and $100,000 a year. And that comes out of the local school budget. It does impact what we can do in terms of providing appropriate class sizes, textbooks, maintenance, et cetera. And it is an issue that has to be resolved. And Senator Farioli, I know you're going to ask the question again. I will say I'm most supportive of the equity issue. That I recognize the difficulty of implementing the whole task force report. But there was one section of it, as Todd mentioned, that talked about the issue of needing to address some of the smaller ESD issues.
Questions for the committee? Senator Byers.
Just one simple one to this review. Do you agree that there's some minimum level of funding that's necessary to operate for all the ESDs?
To me, that makes some sense.
It's sort of a rough ballpark number of what the scope of that number might be. Is it $1 million?
If you take a look at the just what's happening in the various ESD budgets around the state, that, you know, that's between $1.5 million, $2 million, somewhere in there. However, Lake County was operating at $500,000, and they're saying they're not having enough. So yeah, I can recognize that. So I'm not exactly sure where that dollar figure.
So you think that floor may be around a minimum of $1 million to $1.5 million?
Yes.
Senators, I would add that the Association of ESDs has a subcommittee working to address that very issue and identifying those kinds of specific costs that need to be available in each one of our educational service districts.
There's a committee doing that now?
Yes. I believe.
So how soon will they have a report?
That's 2006, Senator.
It's like within the next couple of weeks.
I'll have to defer an answer on that question because there are people here today that will probably be able to answer that and may well speak to that. But just so that everyone's aware, I know that we are working as an education system to identify the very kinds of issues that you're describing.
Well, Senator, the quality education models out there, if you feel like throwing bricks at the moon, you're... There's a lot of opportunity. Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I ran back to my office to get a report from Oregon Department of Education on special education funding. One of the questions that I have for you folks is that theoretically you could level ESD funding if you did a couple things. In other words, for the child with significant disabilities, that the dollars would follow the child. The other thing would be that our regional operations of Oregon Department of Education that deal with autism, you know, blind and hearing impaired, if those programs were expanded to where they literally could then provide the services to the ESD or to the district, if those things came with the funding, it appears to me that is the stumbling block to leveling the funding, if that's what I keep hearing over and over again. What is your thought on that? Dollars following the child with a very high cost. Also, the support services being provided by a regional state system that is designed, was originally passed, I believe, in 83, was supposed to give the support to you. Do you think that expanding that idea might actually solve this problem of inequity?
Senator, I'm going to try and help with that. I want to bring into this issue, because I think you brought a very critical piece to this that we haven't really talked about, and that's whether or not the dollars ought to follow the child. But I have a feeling after listening to some of this testimony that with forced consolidations of school districts, with changing configurations of ESDs, with forced redrawing of district boundaries, with time and distance being a factor, the fact of the matter is communities tried to deliver services any which way they could. Sometimes the school district did it. If you could wrestle enough money in the door that way, that's how you did it. And if you couldn't, with the school district, what you did is defaulted to a position of exceptions. You probably all have drawers full of forms and files and people on staff that work on nothing but exceptions to try to get more money through the door. And what couldn't be brought through the door that way, the local community voted itself a tax base and called it an ESD. And you know, it's just been because of the tax... restructuring that we've had with Measure 5 and Measure 50 that people have been caught in a formula that now can't respond to need. And I have a feeling that doing this, as you suggest, and we ought to take a look at this, Steve, having the dollars follow the child doesn't take into consideration that what folks in the communities did is develop a whole set of strategies for adaptation to circumstances. So you've got an adaptive management program going on an informal basis to try to get all the resources you can get, and we're trying to look for some kind of formula that we can lay on the top of this thing and make it all sensible. And the fact is that basically you took creative strategies, creative finance, passive least resistance. In some cases, we saw school districts bootlegging paper students back and forth to try to get money in the door that way. And I'm not sure we're going to solve the problem with a magic bullet formula.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up, this is more of a statement, but if you look at this, this is the organizational chart for special education in Portland. Now, these things could be done by the school district, okay, which it is, or it could be done by an ESD.
Right.
But the whole problem with making any of these systems flexible and work and able to work is the fact that there has to be dollars that follow those children that are going to be dealt with by each district or ESD. And so I'm thinking that that, in fact, may be a silver bullet to doing this, well, but just the fact that the dollars are going to follow.
Let's look at it. It may be the equation, or it certainly may be an important part of the equation. Gentlemen, we have a time crunch on our hands here. I've already asked Mr. Campbell, David Campbell from Clackamas ESD, for the consideration of deferring his testimony. He made the presentation of the ESD report originally. It was very helpful. And also Mr. Groner to defer his testimony till later in the week. I'd like to bring forward Mr. Mike Vermillion from Lane County ESD. He traveled a great distance to be here.
The second time.
Yes, sir. And that will, after Mr. Vermillion's testimony, that will conclude today's set, and then we'll come back to Monday morning. Do we have to come back again? Our next schedule would be Monday morning at 8:30 here. Mr. Vermillion, please.
Thank you, Chairman Ferrioli and members of the Senate Revenue Committee. I am Mike Vermillion, Superintendent of the Lane Education Service District, but I want to make the distinction. I'm not here today in that role. My role here today is as co-chair of the Oregon Association of School Executives School Funding Coalition Steering Committee. I think I have a handout. I hope it was handed out. And for just a bit of education and then quickly to the point, I'm really here to bring a message from that School Funding Coalition. First of all, the membership of the OA School Funding Coalition is made up of all 200 K-12 local school district and ESD superintendents. We have a governance structure that puts in place a steering committee. That steering committee is made up of 38 local school district superintendents and 3 ESD superintendents. They represent large, small, metro, rural, rich, poor, and all geographical areas of the state. Von Naso is the co-chair of that committee with me. The purpose is to reach consensus around school funding issues, and of course the ESD equity issue is a school funding issue that I think that is on the radar screen of all local school districts and ESDs. It just isn't an ESD issue, as you can tell by the testimony that preceded me. The steering committee has met 7 times on the average of about 4 to 5 hours each time since the spring of 2000. So we put 25 to 35 hours of deliberation into a lot of issues. The ESD equity issue has been one of them. The diversity of the group, as I might say, when you're representing rural as well as urban, is very lively and sometimes uncontrolled, as co-chair I can attest to. But we do coalesce around a number of issues, and the issue before you is Senate Bill 260. And on December 13th, a meeting, the steering committee agreed to support the task force recommendation on equity. The steering committee met again yesterday and reaffirmed their position in support of the ESD equity issue. Basically the language says we'll phase in the proposed 95-5 revenue split for ESDs, including the requirement that 90% of the ESDs must be ESD funds must be allocated through the resolution process. And that's one that people have coalesced around.
And compromise did occur to get to that point, because I think the issue is there are probably things, whether it be, as Senator Byers mentioned, a floor or factors, as you've mentioned, Mr. Chair, that would, in fact, help to provide equity and identify some of the issues that may separate us in terms of providing equitable services across the state to all youngsters. Mr. Herberg mentioned previously that there are some subcommittees working. There's a subcommittee of the Oregon Association of ESDs, and the five affected ESDs are on that subcommittee to look at what are the factors that differentiate them or other small, sparsely populated rural ESDs from those of us that don't fall into that category. There are other small schools that are working today. Ozzie Rose cannot be here today because to deliver this message, because he's working with a small schools coalition to see how we can identify that. I think the central theme is that we know that our small rural schools are in trouble, and we need to do something about that.
So Mr. Rose is needing to do what today?
He is meeting with small schools, small school coalition.
For the purpose of?
Trying to find what are the factors there that may be affected.
Well, we wish him Godspeed.
Yeah. So anyway, we coalesce. People feel that it is the right thing to do. That was mentioned to me a number of occasions yesterday, to have equity. Now, what are the mitigating factors that differentiate one ESD from another? That's what people are working on, one district from another.
Have we backed away from the forced consolidation recommendations?
Yes. This is school funding. We deal with school funding issues. This is not the other issues. But I would say, if you're asking me personally, I would say that people are backing away from the forced consolidation.
It really is the equity question.
It's the equity question.
Do you support the issue of ADNW as the only formula, or should we be looking at service?
I think there ought to be a parallel. If we have a system that provides funding and it can be defended for K-12 districts, there ought to be a parallel way of looking at funding for ESD. That's sort of my opinion.
Okay, So the court's definition of equity was dollars per student.
Mm-hmm.
If we do a dollars per student and services are lost, don't you think the courts will respond to an equity argument based on services and access to services? In other words, aren't we just as likely to end up with districts bringing litigation on a service basis for the definition of equity as we are with an ADMW question?
That could very well be the case. I think the issue, though, and the thrust of my testimony is there are probably some mitigating factors that differentiate ESDs as there are mitigating factors that differentiate urban school districts from rural school districts. We need to wrestle with those issues, and I think it'd be best that the committees that are close to that issue come up, committees meaning the subcommittees in the education committee, can sort of come up with what are those factors, and then present them back as ways to look at the issue to you.
Questions from the committee? All of the members, really, I'll speak for the committee, really appreciate the time and the energy people are devoting to this issue. It's a difficult issue. It's an emotional issue. It will require careful consideration, and we will ultimately arrive at a political solution, as we do with all of the questions in this building. But I certainly appreciate you coming up from Lane County. I know that three of our members who serve on this committee come from your community and are very attentive to the issues. So I appreciate it. Mr. Campbell, I thank you again for deferring your testimony. Mr. Bremer, thank you for giving the chair the possibility to bring you back on this testimony later. We are in adjournment. We will stand in adjournment until Monday morning at 8:30.